Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are running this live here again between week 20 and week 21 of the fantasy baseball season. Unfortunately, baseball season is coming to a close, but there is a lot of activity, a lot of action coming off the MLB trade deadline. And of course, a lot of the fun recent call-ups and lots of baseball news. So here to cover it with you for the next hour plus is my man, Mike Mager. Mike, how are you?
Doing well, bud. Good to be back on with you. Yeah, there's a lot going on these days. A lot of call-ups.
It's crazy. We're going to go through it all. We're going to help get you set for 15, 12 teamers, everything you need. Maybe go over some players that are easy drops, some of the more tougher drops. So I know you're doing well, but you're not doing as well as the Boston Red Sox, right? Like, nobody's doing as well.
Who is? Yes. Yeah, hottest team in baseball. They are playing great, like really solidifying their spot in the playoffs. And they're hot. I can easily see them passing my struggling Yankees and climbing up into second place soon.
Yeah, it's close. Obviously, the Rays are still winning that division, best record in the American League. But that American League East is really kind of the creme de la creme in what is kind of a weaker AL than usual. But the Boston Red Sox, they are on an insane stretch. They've won their last eight games. Their record over their last 36 is 31-5, which is absolutely insane. And I just saw something came across my feed that their BABIP over the last 30 days is 546, which is the highest stretch for a team in the history of any 30-day period.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, the Yanks are struggling now, but you could easily say that the three best AL teams are in the AL East with Yankees, Red Sox, and Rays. Not really seeing a team that the National League is going to be scared of in the AL Central or West right now, but still time.
It feels to me, I mean, we'll kind of go over these, the leagues, the divisions, wildcard races, but, and maybe it just has something to do with the fact that the Dodgers are 2-8 in their last 10 games. And I don't know. And of course, all the PCA stuff and the Cubs, Brewers are crushing it, but even though the odds are very high, like after the Dodgers acquired Skubal, I believe their percent chance of winning the World Series went up to 41%, which is just obviously insane. And most sharp bettors, you take the field in a case like that, especially when it's high. There's just so many teams, anything can happen. But I mean, does it feel to you like a bit more of a wider open race where there are a lot of teams that could potentially just get hot and get there to the World Series, potentially win it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, it seems like the best teams are in the National League, really. I mean, you could make a case that the Dodgers, Brewers, Braves, and even Cubs might be the four best teams in baseball. And then, you know, you get to the playoffs and you have, you know, these shorter series, and I don't think you can easily write off the Phillies with Sanchez and Luzardo and Wheeler is a very formidable, you know, top three of their pitching staff. So, yeah, I think, you know, the Dodgers look to be the best team on paper, at least. But, you know, I would take the field moving forward. But it's tough to imagine, like, any American League team being favored against any of the National League teams in the World Series right now. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox, it's an interesting group, a team that's been obviously surging at this level, but they've been without Trevor Story, who was one of their better hitters last season. I mean, they're being fueled by guys like Caleb Durbin, who was one of the worst hitters over the first month and a half. I mean, he was dropped in all formats. They moved up a guy in Sinan Rafaela into the two-hole, who, you know, couldn't walk to the park. And all of a sudden, he doesn't really matter because he's getting it done. I mean, I think he had four home runs against the Dodgers in that series in L.A. He just looked insane. And they can't figure out really their leadoff spot. I mean, they had Mickey Gasper, quad A guy, at the top of the lineup for so long. Then it was the Anthony Seigler era. Now it's Nick Sogard. Like, it is, it's weird. And they got Jaren Duran and all kinds of drama with him. You've got rumors flying. I mean, this whole, like, you know, the X Twitter world of stuff, like this whole Reddit world, Reddit subworld, where a guy says, I know for a fact, I don't know if you read or saw this, that there's this Roman Anthony and Marcelo Mayer have, you know, beef. They were best friends, but either they had a fight over a girl, or Marcelo Mayer was, like, you know, sleeping with, like, Roman Anthony's sister. Like, all this gossip, and people just run with it, and it's absolutely crazy. But, yeah, the Boston Red Sox are a lot of the talk of Major League Baseball right now.
Yeah, well, I think they're doing it on the field, so credit to them. Yeah, no, they, I mean, every day it seems like they're scoring plenty of runs and getting clutch hitting. So, yeah, it's a lineup that, you know, maybe you could say is without any superstars, but it's pretty formidable. And they're getting, you know, like you mentioned, Durbin, Yoshida starting to play more and hit. They're getting some really nice contribution from Monasterio at shortstop. I mean, it's really, the whole lineup is contributing. Kind of long. I think they had a big homer the other day. So, yeah, they're getting it done.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously our friend Jason DuPont is loving every minute of this. I know he's going to all the games, high-stakes NFBC player Jason. But it seems to me like the Red Sox are just in my feed more than ever. Maybe, you know, just a lot of, you know, Jared Karabas and people, you know, responding to him and this and that. But the one thing I, you know, about the, what was it? I was just thinking about this. There was a new thing that came up today. Oh, about how the Red Sox, ironically, have been doing much better. Like, this turnaround happens to coincide with them parting ways with Driveline's Kyle Bodie, who was doing some consulting work with them, and then someone else they let go from the organization, and all of a sudden they're going off. But it's never just that cut and dry, right? I mean, there has to be other things, factors we don't know about.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's a lot going on behind the scenes. But, you know, they're, over the last several years, their pitching development has been super, and they're just getting a tremendous season from Sonny Gray, and other guys are contributing. The bullpen looks solid lately. So, yeah, I think it's a team effort.
What do you think about, is there a big advantage of having such a southpaw-heavy rotation? Four of their five are lefties, and it's been a pretty good run for them.
Yeah, I don't know. And, you know, you would think in Boston it would not be, really, because, you know, it benefits right-handed hitters, and then they have the Green Monster. So you wouldn't think in Boston it would, but it certainly makes things interesting for us fantasy players, because when you set your weekly lineups, that's one of the first things you always check. You know, you check to see who's playing in Sacramento, who's playing in Colorado, and, you know, from Cincinnati. And one of the next things that I'll check is, you know, what platoon bats are playing the Red Sox, because it's definitely a unique rotation.
By the way, yesterday was the, I think, arguably the craziest game of that we've seen. It was the White Sox and Red Sox, Battle of the Sox. I think it was 13-12 at the end, but the White Sox took the lead like five different times. In the middle of that game, I guess, or later in the game, Eric Miller, who is a new Boston Red Sox, screwed over a lot of us who picked him up last week as a closer for the Giants, he hit new White Sox backup catcher Joey Bart in the hand with like a 97-mile-per-hour fastball and fractured it. So just a random kind of side effect of last night's crazy game.
Yeah, I guess Bart's gone, at least for the foreseeable future.
Edgar Quero just keeps climbing back in there. So, yeah, as far as this, the rest of the American League, you've got the White Sox really surging. They're up three games on Minnesota and Cleveland. Minnesota and Cleveland both made some additions at the trade deadline. Of course, Minnesota law is losing Joe Ryan to the IL. Cleveland really looks like always strong pitching. The hitting's been boring for quite some time, but guys like Chase DeLauder and Travis Bazzana have been basically everything is advertised so far. So this is a really good race. I wanted to ask you how you think it shakes out between those three teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think the White Sox are having a great season, especially, you know, thinking back to where they were. They were horrendous last season. I don't recall their record, but I think they were like the second worst team, maybe the worst team in the AL, I think, only behind the Rockies. So it's been, you know, whatever happens from here on out, this is a huge development year for the White Sox, and they look like legit and they're on the ascendancy. The Twins, I think, are having a really good season. I mean, remember, they were, you know, big sellers last year. They sold their entire bullpen, I think, and then they started the year with Pablo Lopez being out for the year with an injury, and I think we expected them to be horrendous, and for them to be around 500 is, you know, quite an accomplishment. That said, I can see the Twins kind of falling out of it moving forward. I just think there's too many injuries, too many holes, too many losses to bear. The Guardians, I would probably be my pick to win the division right now. I think if I had to make one, I do like what they did. I mean, these aren't, you know, huge moves. The Guardians don't spend any money, but I think it was a real nice boost. You know, they got J. Ram back. They added Joe Adell. They added Nate Lowe. They brought up a really good looking rookie, Angel Genoa. Yeah. Apologies for screwing up.
I'm going to call him Genoa Salami, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not that. But yeah, I like what they're doing. You know, they had a tremendous run last year, so you never know. But the one team I would not count out, which you didn't mention, but is right there too, are the Tigers.
They're hot.
The Tigers are hot, and, you know, it's kind of a misleading stat, but when I look at, say, run differential, every team in the AL West has a negative run differential. The best run differential in the American League is the Yankees at plus 81. The second best is the Detroit Tigers at plus 80. Mm-hmm. And then the Red Sox plus 77, and the Rays are only plus 41. So the Tigers, at least by run differential, you would think would have a much better record than three under. And, you know, everyone's ready to write them off with the trades of Skubal and Mize, but they keep winning and they're hitting well. And I think they found something in this Troy Melton, looks fantastic. So I think it's going to be a pretty interesting race. I could see the White Sox, Guardians, and Tigers fighting it out. I think the Twins do fall back, though.
I'm with you, absolutely. That is a good point about the Tigers. That run differential is quite high. They've been surging lately, and obviously losing Tarik Skubal is a big deal. But like you mentioned, Troy Melton has been unstoppable. Keiter Montero has a huge difference between his ERA and his underlining peripherals there. But he's been getting the job done as well. And then Framber Valdez, it's funny, as soon as Skubal's gone, he's like, I am the ace now. And actually has a good start. And they got Jackson Jobe coming back. We'll talk about that. He's going to debut on Saturday. And then Drew Anderson, pitch count's been low, but he's like an NFBC darling. I feel like people are always trying to scoop him up, hoping for something good out of him.
Yeah, he can look very good in short stretches. I think I kind of need to see him get to five innings and maintain that effectiveness. But you never know. I mean, you know, that was kind of the concern with Jax on the Rays. But once he kind of got up to five innings, he was off and running. Yeah. So certainly could happen with Drew Anderson.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously I don't expect much from Jack Flaherty, even if he does, when he does come back. He's not somebody I've been big on. But eventually, you know, I mean, Reese Olson will be back next year, most likely. Jackson Jobe now, you know, coming back. I mean, this isn't a, you know, bad squad. And then, of course, the offense doesn't look all that bad either. You know, I did mention last week in one of my articles about how the Max Clark hype. Like, so I don't know about you or where you were with this, or maybe you should have given me a heads up. Hey, Vlad, you're way too low on your Max Clark bid range. But I did not expect for people just out of the woodwork to come out and spend 100 on average. I understand people have some money left. You kind of won a big push. But I was looking at it. I was like, okay, Max Clark does seem like he's going to be good, but there are limitations in that ballpark. He just had the series of his life in Sacramento, of all places. And then the next 2 weeks, they're going to these, you know, not great parks. Like, he's just going to cool off. I mean, it's just the way it's most likely going to be. So I didn't know, like, where those bid ranges come from. But then in hindsight, when you look at it, it all does start to make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people, you know, still had a decent amount of money. And looking at it, he's the top prospect. A lot of teams looking for hitting. Gives a little power, a little speed. So I understand the bids. I was lower, didn't get him anywhere. I was mostly 40s, 50s, I think. And maybe one or two teams where I had more money, I was in like the high 60s. That was as high as I got. I didn't roster him anywhere.
I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, the other thing is for next year, you know, we'll see if this Zaire Hope is good. And if he's healthy, River Ryan could be a very effective pitcher, especially in that park. So the, you know, the haul they got for Scoobal might be helping them next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the sexiest of lineups, but obviously you adding Kevin McGonigal this year, who's the front runner of the AL Rookie of the Year race. And of course, Dylan Dingler, like on his way to possibly 35 home runs. He's been incredible. Riley Green, just solid as ever. Spencer Torkelson, as volatile as ever. First overall pick, you just can't get going. And at some point, you hope Kerry Carpenter gets going. He's been dealing with plantar fasciitis, which obviously can really take a lot out of you. So hopefully he's back sometime in the next few weeks and gets going. So I really like this team. I feel like the X factor on Minnesota is September Royce Lewis. So every year, or at least last year, Royce Lewis just comes on, goes on a tear, stealing bases, hitting home runs. But obviously, it takes a lot more than just, you know, one guy to get going. But I really like Cleveland. Cleveland is really, you know, the team I like best because of the pitching staff, the mix of hitters there, and they added Nathaniel Lowe and forgot someone else. So it's a fun
Adele. Yeah,
Adele, of course.
Yeah, and now if J-Ram is in fact healthy, you know, I could see him having a big close to the season. Yeah, it'll be a fun race.
And Joe Adell, I read something how just like he was like a little kid, energized. Like you pretty much kind of been playing in the minor leagues your whole life. It's like your only life you know is the life of the Angels world, right? And then you go to a team like Cleveland, different organization. Now you're in a playoff race, so he's pumped. I know he has his struggles, massively struggles against right-handed pitching, but I don't know. I think he's going to help and contribute to that team.
Yeah, I would think so. They made some nice moves, and I was a little surprised they sent Manzardo down, but Nate Lowe was a good pickup for them, I think.
Yeah, he's been really good. So there's your AL Central. AL West, kind of boring, of course. You got the Astros there up top, just a small little lead on the Texas Rangers, and then Seattle right behind them. And then in the NL, of course, you got the Braves sort of running away with that division. Philadelphia Phillies most likely going to get a wild card spot. I think it'd be kind of shocking if they didn't. The Dodgers and the West is kind of boring. You know, you've got the Dodgers there, and then maybe one of Arizona or San Diego sneak through. It's all kind of close there. But really, it's about that Central Division. You've got the Brewers leading the majors and have the best record in the majors. Cubs are just incredible, red hot. The energy there when the Dodgers were playing them in Wrigley was just insane. It just, for me, just on TV, felt like a playoff atmosphere. That team is always scary.
Yeah, I think that's probably the only chance for like a real divisional race in the NL is the Brewers and Cubs. Brewers are just so solid, though. The Cubs are going to have to stay hot and take it from them because I don't see the Brewers collapsing. But both teams are really formidable. So you have you know, I think probably five very good teams. The Phillies are underperforming, but I'd be surprised if they don't have a little push of their own.
Like, that rotation for Milwaukee is just nasty. Nasty, nasty, nasty. Like, Kyle Harrison was supposed to be a big prospect. We expected big things from him in San Francisco. Then he went to Boston. And Milwaukee, despite a little bit injuries that he's dealt with this year, he's just been phenomenal. I think he was pulled, like dehydrated or something in his last start. And I thought, oh man, it probably didn't go well. And then I looked up the game and it was, you know, like one hit in five innings with 11 strikeouts. I mean, you got him, you've got, you know, Cy Miz, Logan Henderson, who, man, like, I mean, where's he? He's going to be a top 100 fantasy pick next year, right? It's a great team.
Yeah, I mean, he has that upside. I don't know. I tend to do a poor job timing his IL stints. You know, I tend to pick him up shortly before he goes on the IL. But yeah, he's definitely got the capability. Yeah, it's just it's a solid team that plays strong defense, strong fundamentals, and they're aggressive on the base paths. It's just a really well coached, well managed team.
That's great. Yeah. Do you let and let's be I know we're in front of lots of people here, but let's be real. Outside of maybe the Red Sox, since you are a big Yankee fan, I know you like to keep things neutral, but like, are there any fan bases that maybe on Twitter, X, or anywhere in the world that kind of like annoy you, where you kind of like the team less because their fans won't stop chirping?
No, not really.
Ah, oh my God.
I can't think of any. No, I mean, as a baseball fan, I would love to see anybody but the Dodgers win. I mean, I am very pro player in terms of these labor issues. Can't stand many of these owners, and you know, everyone just blaming the Dodgers for killing baseball when so many teams have the ability to spend more or you know, make trades, and they're just not aggressive enough. And I would love to see a smaller market team, you know, win the World Series and just blow up all these, you know, kind of fake arguments by the owners to try to gain public sentiment. So, apologies to you as a Dodgers fan. It's not the Dodgers. It's not the Dodger fans, but it's more, I would love, you know, for kind of the labor relations and what we're going to see this offseason. I think it'd be nice to see someone other than the Dodgers win this year.
I mean, you could call me, Dodger fans could call me a fake Dodger fan if you want, but I've been a fan of theirs since a kid, but I'm also very understanding of all this as well. And I want there to not be a long dispute. I want baseball to continue. And I was really hoping the Dodgers weren't going to get Tarik Skubal, even though it was most likely going to be the case, because I didn't want another sort of, you know, notch in the owners, in this dispute, right? Argument. Right. And so do you think the Dodgers winning it will add to that as well? Most likely, like, delay things, or
you know, is what it is. Yeah, I don't know. And I really don't know if public sentiment really has any impact on the actual negotiations. No. I mean, I don't think they do. I mean, the MLB is just, you know, on this press tour and they're, you know, kind of blaming the Dodgers and the lack of a salary cap for all the, you know, all the ills, when a lot of it is just very wealthy teams that are just refusing to spend, who are not scouting players as well, who is not developing players as well, who are not running their teams as well, who do nothing in free agency. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, again, my opinion, a lot of bad owners out there. And, you know, they're kind of blaming the Dodgers' success for, you know, problems of their own making. So I'm not very sympathetic to that argument. I do fear that there's going to be a lot of effort trying to sway public opinion, but you know, in the negotiating room, it probably means little to nothing.
Let me ask you this about the we're gonna talk some players and some fantasy and some fab here in a minute. Last thing about your Yankees and how they've been managed, and of course sending down Jason Dominguez and Anthony Volpe. I've always been right about Volpe, apparently, and I'm sorry to my fellow Italian American friends. It's not that. Again, I will preface or not preface, but stamp it with I was born in Italy, so I think I can have a little bit of say, even though I'm not Italian. Maybe not, I guess. But you were right about Jason Dominguez. Yeah, it just looks just very bad. Just everything with his defense specifically, right? And that's a big deal. If you're on a team like this, you can't. There's no DH spot for you, buddy. So can't play defense. Got to go back to AAA. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's a poorly constructed team. You know, in terms of the pieces don't fit all that well together, but yeah, I mean, you have to be able to at least play a competent outfield defense if you're going to, you know, get playing time in this team. And honestly, you know, it's the same thing as with Volpe. I mean, you could take a low average with, you know, some pop and some steel, you know, but you really can't sacrifice good defense at shortstop. I mean, that's a premium position on the field, and Lombard is just a fantastic defender. So it's encouraging to see the Yankees bring him up, and he's looked really good from the start in terms of the glove. But yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, some of the better teams in the league are strong defensively, especially up the middle. I think sometimes the Yankees would be better served trading a lot of these prospects, because they, with all the hype they get, it's tough for them to live up to it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and that's perfect segue into the hefty shortstop prospect pool that has now occurred, because
you've never ended.
George Lombard Jr. was called up, has had a nice week so far, seems to be fitting right in. Of course, he's a Yankee. There'll be a little bit of a tax there in NFBC. And then you've got Kalen Culpepper, who is obviously a very big prospect for the Twins. He gets the call, will replace Ryan Kreidler at shortstop for them as they make a push for the playoff race. And then Angel Gineo, who is shortstop eligible on NFBC, doesn't have an outright position, but all three of these guys are shortstops, and people might have a tough decision, especially in 12 teamers. In 15 teamers, you can always make room for somebody like this, but in 12 teamers, like, before getting into them too deep, is there like a cutoff point on, if you're looking at the 12th team, you know, guys that are 100% rostered but like haven't been all that great, like maybe like a Willy Adames or you know, an Ernie Clement, or like, is there somebody, one of these guys you like so much that you would take it over a consistent, consistent major leaguer who's 100% rostered?
Yeah, that's tough. And you're probably asking the wrong person, because I tend to hold on to guys way too long in 12s. I mean, I think it depends what you're looking for. I think all of them might be worthy of being picked up, whether you're making a big drop for them. I guess I want to see. I'll take until Sunday to decide. You know, Gineo to me looks really good at the plate from what little I've seen. But my concern with him is I want to see if they get him in the lineup every day. You know, you'd like to think if he keeps hitting like this, they'll make room for him, but you know, they're pretty set at second, third, and short now with J-Ram back. Yeah. So I don't know if they're going to give him DH time. He has not played the outfield from what I could discern in the minors, at least not in this past year. So that's kind of the one thing I'm looking at, is to see if he's going to be in the lineup every day, because his bat was intriguing. Lombard and Culpepper definitely have 15-team relevancy and value. I'm not sure yet on the 12s. But I would think that both are up to play. You know, we just heard about Culpepper, but I mean, over Kreidler, that seems like, you know, a pretty easy move to make for the Twins as they push towards a playoff spot. The Yankees, you know, Lombard's their top prospect. I can't imagine they're bringing him up and wouldn't play him every day at short. I mean, he's their best fielding shortstop. So with those guys, I think you can be confident in everyday play. I think if you told me all of them are going to play every day, Chinayo looks like he might have the most intrigue to me on a fantasy upside, but otherwise, I think I'd take Lombard.
Yeah, there are a lot of similarities, at least from a fantasy standpoint, because they're all guys that had at least 10 home runs, 10 stolen bases in the minors, and you know, between 75 to 95 games played, but not they're heavier on the runs than the RBI for the most part, and they're not guys that necessarily project for massive pop in the majors. At least not early on, but stolen bases. These guys can all run. They're all plus walk rate guys. And as far as strikeouts, the only guy over a 20% strikeout rate in between the three was Lombard. But you know, Kalen Culpepper was a first round draft pick, as was Lombard. And all three are about a year apart each. So Lombard's 21, Culpepper's 23, and Janeo is 22. So for me, a lot of times it comes down to the projected playing time. If there's a clear role for them, as seems to be the case with Culpepper and Lombard, they seem like a little bit of the priority. But you know, Janeo had that 4-for-5 game, 4 hits in his MLB debut, which is, I think, tied or set some Guardians record. A rookie record, but if that infield is set, where is the playing time and how do they force it? That to me is the big question.
Yeah, and he hasn't been running a lot in the minors. He had like 11 stolen bases, which isn't bad. I don't think any of them are. Certainly Lombard isn't a big runner either. The one thing I did notice, just kind of looking at what they were doing in the minors, is that Lombard and Culpepper have like a roughly 11 to 12% launch angle, whereas Janeo in the minors was a 5.4 degree launch angle. That tells me he's a ground ball hitter. He's not, I think he might have a little more challenge kind of finding power in the majors. And that's kind of a really rough assessment too, but you know, it's over time. But that's kind of the challenge that we face in the fantasy world, is these guys get called up and you know, we get to see them for 3 days or something, and then we got to decide how much of our fab to blow on them. And because if you don't get them this week, you they're probably gone. Mm-hmm. So you know, all we can do is kind of look at what they did in the minors, read up on them, and you know, kind of make playing time assumptions, but it's really tough to do after a couple of days.
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, it's tough as is with big leaguers that we've seen around for many years to be able to project them for start sits in an upcoming week if the matchups are kind of average, right? If there's no there doesn't seem to be an edge. They're not going to at Angels and at Athletics for a bunch of games, and it's just a sort of muted matchups. It's hard enough there, let alone with rookies where there are just so many more elements. It's their first time up in the big leagues. Like, we go off of what we've seen over the weekend, and unfortunately it's just part of the fab business. It's like, what did you do this weekend? Because we don't have a lot of data points to go off of outside of what we've seen in the minor. So if Lombard and Culpepper might be close as of now, as far as an average winning bid, let's say they're both around $35-$50 or something like that, if there's people even have that much left, they're going to take away from each other. And especially if we think Janeo is going to stay up too, they can't all be 60 plus dollar bids, but what will come down to the difference maker will be how they perform this weekend. Culpepper comes up and say him and Lombard are close and he hits three home runs over the weekend. That's going to surge him way up in the average winning bid range. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so funny too, because it's, the recency bias in fab bidding is just enormous. I mean, everyone jokes about it as the Sunday tax. And, you have a big game on Sunday, it can have a massive impact on what you go for in fab. And it's just kind of ironic, I guess, or comical, because like of all the sports, baseball, the small sample sizes mean the least probably, just the fact that we'd be so influenced by, one good game or 10 at bats, in this sport. And, you gave a good example too of, you also even have to look at the context. They hit a home run. Was it off of a lousy pitcher or a good pitcher? And you mentioned, I think, when we were bidding on Max Clark, he came up and had his first series in Sacramento, right? I think you mentioned, which definitely impacts, how he's going to do or potentially. So it's really tough to do it, but if you don't recognize the Sunday tax when it's there, you're not going to get the guy either. Because even if you don't think you should be increasing your bids, others will. And so if you want the guy, you got to do it yourself.
Yeah. And I understand it's like a longer term thing. Like you're not just looking at the next 2 weeks, but the Max Clark thing, it's like, okay, he's going from Sacramento against some of the worst bullpen, one of the worst bullpens in the majors, very shady rotation, even though if they were on another team, probably would be a lot more, enticing. And then you got 90 plus degree weather in that ballpark. It just all makes up for the perfect storm. And then he's coming off of that to Seattle against those good pitchers, to San Francisco, which, mutes power, of course. And then the Guardians and the White Sox, who, have, Parker Messick and Sean Burke and Bybee's been pitching well. So it's, I understand you still have seven plus weeks to go, but in the short term, like you are sacrificing maybe a good outfielder that you have for Max Clark in these matchups coming off a real high point. So again, I'm just kind of beating on the horse here, but just wanted to kind of point that out.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And we're not, but we're not even, kind of bidding on players to roster for like an entire season. I mean, there's only going to be what, like 7 weeks left. So, to some extent, we're trying to catch lightning in a bottle.
Speaking of catching lightning in a bottle, let's talk about some starting pitchers, starting with the 15-team group, because there are a lot of them. We've had a lot of guys that have been that all, I guess, had TJ or elbow or just massive issues, hadn't pitched in over a year, and now they're back, all coming back around the same time. We had Wisniewski last week and some others, and now this week we've got Jackson Jobe, Cody Bradford. Jobe is going to make his debut on Saturday. Obviously, very highly regarded prospect prior to his injury. In the beginning of last season, I think his helium was really gaining, and then when he actually pitched, the results weren't all that great. Obviously, he was hurting, so we're going to give him another chance. I think he can obviously still be a really good pitcher, but how do you compare the two from a bidding standpoint? Cody Bradford, of course, had the reconstructive elbow surgery. He hasn't pitched since like late 2004. He came up a little quicker than I thought. I thought it was going to be another week or two, but he was in making minor league appearances, rehab appearances, and then he pitched a few days ago and looked really good. I mean, Cody Bradford is not he's not a power arm. He's more of a crafty lefty, and it works well in that park. But he threw 70 pitches, threw 4.1 scoreless innings, threw 50 of those for strikes, and no runs allowed, 5 strikeouts, a couple of walks in that inning. Bradford's going to go have a little bit of a tough set of matchups. He's at the Angels. It's not the matchup; it's more the Heat or maybe Mike Trout going off, and then you got at the Athletics. So those will be his two starts next week. We're going to see Job in San Francisco this weekend, and then next week, home against Chicago, the White Sox. Job, by the way, looked really good in his five minor league rehab starts. Had like a 17-4 KBB in 17 innings, a low ERA, under two. But his last pitch count was 69 pitches. So between the two, do you think Job's brand name will carry a heftier fab price? And what's your outlook on these two for the rest of the season?
Yeah, it's tough to tell. Coming off of a long injury, neither one, all that established. I think I'm kind of tepid on both in terms of, like, I don't see myself making a big bid on either. If I had to, though, I guess I want to dig into Job a little more, to be honest, and see how he looks. I did like Bradford kind of a couple of years ago pre-injury. He at least has demonstrated that he can get major league hitters out consistently. I mean, to some extent, maybe it's smoke and mirrors. I mean, it's like a sub 90 fastball, maybe, or not a hard tosser at all. But he's deceptive and he gets the job done. And he does, he will strike some guys out. So probably that would be my lean among the two. But I'm not. I don't know. I guess I'm also somewhat skeptical that Bradford can just come up and he'll be healthy the rest of the year. I'm not sure about that either. So I guess I'd say slight edge to Bradford, but I'm not super high on either.
Yeah, I feel like at this point in the season, if you're going to be – so if you're in the mix and you're competing in a 15-teamer, let's put aside 12-teamers because I don't think either of them are 12-team ads. In a 15-teamer, if you're picking them up either for bench depth, bolster your rotation, see how they look, and hope to get lucky, insert them in their lineup. But most people that are actively bidding, have money, and are hunting for a top three spot, most likely have a stronger rotation. I don't want to put a blanket statement around that, but you usually have set players that you're pitching. And most sharp players aren't going to, on a whim, let me pitch Cody Bradford over, I don't know, like a Kumar Rocker single, where one of those Bradford starts are in Sacramento and he may not go five innings to get the win. So that's the sort of thinking that I want to go through. Like, what spot in my roster does he have? What's the outlook for this week? Will I even start him? And then, potentially the rest of the season is there's less to go off of. We don't even know. In fact, if he does struggle, like, he is a guy that had been moved to middle relief before when they had a surplus of starters. And, we know that Jordan Montgomery is going to be back at some point. There's no roster spot for him right now, right? No starting rotation spot for him right now. And then you've got Jack Leiter at some point comes back maybe in September. And so that makes it even tougher to go there. Whereas with Job, I think I like Bradford maybe for the rest of the season a little bit more, but Job, I feel like, has more chances to have that rotation spot for the rest of the year, and a little bit more like upside, right? Like, where you can have those big outings that are actually helpful for your fantasy team, but with more risk for blow up, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I look at it more generally, you have to look at the matchups. I mean, probably going out 3-4 weeks. I mean, a lot can change, but you kind of want to get an idea who the matchups are. And to me, that makes a big difference. I mean, you could like pitcher A a little bit more than pitcher B, but if pitcher B has much easier matchups that you feel safer throwing them, that's going to be the target. I think also, what do you need? Right now, you should be focusing more on categories than ever before. And so are you looking for wins, or are you looking for ratio protection, or are you looking for strikeouts? Like, I don't think either one of these guys has shown high strikeouts, at least in the majors. So I'm not sure either one of them helps you there. Wins, a lot will depend on what type of team you have. How good is the bullpen? on the team. So those are just some of the things that I would look at in trying to kind of develop leans between different options.
And you mentioned Drew Anderson already. He is going to be added in a lot of teams. He does line up for a two-start week. It'll be against division rivals, Cleveland and the White Sox. Both should be home starts. His pitch count's low. I mean, he threw 42 in the last outing. Very unlikely to go five. You'd have to get really lucky to get a squeeze a win out of him. So to put Drew Anderson high on your priority list is to is more for depth security and hoping that in the last 5 weeks you have a guy that's ramped up to 75 plus pitches and is helpful and can help your ratios, get you some strikeouts. So I'm all right on him. Some other guys not necessarily interested in. You got, you know, Max Scherzer, Daniel Lynch the fourth, not David Lynch as I originally wrote in the in our outline. He's moving to the rotation for Kansas City, who's just absolutely strapped, you know, poor team, just you know, injury after injury in that rotation. And then Zebby Matthews is back, the ghost of Zebby. So there's that.
Back to haunt fantasy managers worldwide.
Man, it's been rough. Like, legit, for two seasons was the best KBB guy in the minor leagues. And just the control was just ridiculous. It was like, you know, Kirby-esque. And yeah, he's tough to deal with right now. But outside of those, let me just bring up four rookies that have two-start weeks, and let's kind of talk it through and see how we can prioritize these guys. You've got Andrew Painter, Mitch Bratt, Gabriel Hughes, and Ryan Johnson. I do think Johnson on the Angels, he's going to get Texas, Kansas City at home this week. I feel like I'll kind of break him down and you go ahead, but to me, it kind of feels like the lowest priority of the bunch. Andrew Painter is going to get at St. Louis, at Minnesota, assuming he's okay. He had a hamstring injury, his day-to-day. He had the second worst ERA until he got sent down in June or July, I forget, in the majors among qualified pitchers. It was like 7+. It was just him and Michael Lorenzen, I believe. So he's got those two starts. Mitch Bratt and Gabriel Hughes are very intriguing. Bratt, he actually may just have one this week because Michael Soroka may be back. But if Mitch Bratt gets two starts, he would get the Rockies at home, which is always really nice, and then at Atlanta, which is a little scarier. But he is coming off a massive 9-strikeout, 7-scoreless-inning one-hitter against the Padres. And you got Gabriel Hughes for the Rockies, who he typically wouldn't be part of a conversation, but he gets a road 2-start. He's had a nice KBB in his few starts, got rocked by Tampa, but a lot of teams do. So those four guys, Painter, Bratt, Hughes, and Ryan Johnson.
Yeah, and this may not age well, but if I had to put gun to head, go with one, I think I'd go with Painter. And the reason is I think he's looked a lot better since coming back up. He's pitched well, I think, in two starts. The team, you know, it's the best of the teams you mentioned behind him. He should get plenty of run support, good bullpen. So I think if I had to, you know, I mean, and he has the prospect pedigree, you know, he definitely struggled mightily when he got called up, but sometimes, you know, correcting a pitch mix can have a big impact. And I think I would go there. I mean, you know, if you're looking for strikeouts, you know, Ryan Johnson maybe has some appeal against two weaker opponents at home. But, you know, all these guys are huge risks to your ratios. And I think you just got to be careful. I don't know. I can't bring myself to roster a Rockies starting pitcher. It's that limitation has served me well over the years, and I don't see enough here that I would break it for him.
I already have him on a main event, but it's not a main event that's going to win place. So I'm rolling him out there. So just
there you go.
Fun. Just something to look for, even though it doesn't matter. Yep. Yeah. It's funny because Mitch Pratt's the guy that I like the most. Like, I made a case for him when he became available for Fab, and I, you know, put my money where my mouth was because I added him on my main event teams, and my one that's in the mix hurt bad. It was really bad, but I liked his profile, you know, pedigree, you know, people like that word, drink. But I really liked him, kind of, you know, lefty, and he showed it the last couple of starts. So unfortunately, the ratios got banged up. I've of course since dropped him, and it's the, you know, the story is old as roto time. As soon as you drop a guy like that, then he goes off.
Has his best start, yeah.
But also, it's, you know, even for a single at home against the Rockies, I think that's doable. I think he's in the mix. I don't know if we shouldn't be spending double digits here. I agree, Gabriel Hughes, same thing. There's no reason to chase him because it just lines up perfectly for him as far as the matchups are for two road starts. Like you mentioned, huge ratio risk, but he's a quick drop after that. So I think you got to knock it down a few dollars because you know you don't really need him after that. So, but Reed Johnson.
Yeah, I probably should have been clearer, I guess. You know, to some extent, depends what your intentions are, what your hopes are. I mean, are you looking for a guy that you could start next week that hopefully, you know, you can keep in your rotation? Or is this a pure stream and you're, you know, ready, willing, and able to drop them after a week, you know? I mean, like, use as an example. Like, I'm not starting him at home anywhere. And, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, I think at Arizona is pretty risky and at San Francisco can be, but at least it's, you know, at least he's outside the court. If it's a pure stream, I can understand it, even if I let others do it and don't partake myself. But I just don't see any kind of use for him after that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Andrew Painter is the top guy there, especially if you're comparing him versus Gabriel Hughes and you're looking to get lucky with a win, maybe two. It's very rare, by the way. It's like 8 to 10% of two starters. I've been tracking it all season, about like literally 3 out of the 30 or so two-steppers every week will get you two wins. So it's very rare that you get those two. But Painter gives you a much better chance because of the offense and the backing. Like, Colorado just doesn't win games, even in Hughes' games when he was up. I mean, he's still like 0-3 or whatever it is in the 6 starts. Painter, if he gets 5 innings, you're in St. Louis, you're in Minnesota. Those are winnable games. Those are, you know, it's worth the risk. So Painter makes the most sense, assuming his hamstring's okay.
Yeah, and assuming that, you know, his improved performance after the call-up is legit and not a mirage, you know, I mean, If he's showing signs of reverting back to the way he pitched in the beginning of the season, he becomes an easy cut. But at least, you know, if the improvements stick and are real, then I think then you have like an asset you might be able to use most weeks moving forward.
From a couple of the other names I mentioned, I know it's still early in the weekend processing, you know, fat period weekend hasn't even begun, but between Max Scherzer or waiting for Daniel Lynch to build up, the rookie George Klaassen gets the Rangers at home this week. Robert Stock, by the way, had a really nice start home against Washington. He's got a great story. And Hunter Dobbins, who might line up for a 2 start, kind of scary. He's been good, but when he's been up for spot starts, but home Philly at the Cubs, if it works out that way. By the way, RIP those Quinn Matthews shares.
Yeah.
What a bummer. Supposed to get Rockies at home and steady goes to the minors, and he did nothing wrong.
Yeah, that was a quick demotion. Caught me by surprise. I didn't get him anywhere, but yeah, I mean, among those guys, my initial reaction is D, none of the above. But I guess, you know, maybe I'm kind of at least curious to get my eyes on Klaassen, which I haven't had a chance to. I think maybe he has some potential at least, and a home start against Texas, who does not seem to be hitting well, maybe, you know, has some appeal, but I don't know. I'm not, Stock has been a really good story and he's pitched pretty well, but I'm staying away from the Nationals, even on, you know, even in a start at home. And I don't like that those matchups for Dobbins at all.
I don't like him either. Blake Tedwell is another guy on the map. He's probably going to line up for a home two-step against the Astros and the Rockies at home. He's coming off of a start where he pitched five innings at Texas a couple of days ago. 100 pitches he threw, gave up six hits, two runs on six hits, a walk, three strikeouts. Is he in that mix for you?
Yeah. Actually, he, if I remember correctly, I was kind of tracking him, curious to see how he looked, and I think he gave up the runs like in the first inning right away, got hit, gave up some runs, but then settled down nicely, which I kind of like to see. And I saw his matchups aren't that bad either. So, he would be, that seems more appealing to me than a bunch of the other names you rattled off before.
And Quinn Matthews, by the way, will likely be back for a spot start. And then doesn't mean you have to necessarily hold him. But not this week 21, but the week after week 22, the Cardinals are going to play eight games, including a doubleheader on that Monday at Cincinnati. So most likely Quinn Matthews will be up for that. Quinn Hughes, a hockey player, sorry. Not to miss
that. Yeah. Something about spot start at Great American seems risky.
Yeah. Unless they bring out the TJ Friedel, Ivar Johnson lineup. We'll see.
Yeah, never know.
12 teamers, just some names. I know you focus on 15, but you know the ilk of this group of pitchers. Just want to throw out some guys that are available, mostly widely available in 12 teamers, but that are potential for, let's just assume, just the standard fare of your goal is you want to get more strikeouts for your strikeout categories, get lucky in wins, not get your ratios blown up. I was going to bring up five names for you and just let's rank them. Let's figure out how people should prioritize them. The first is Noah Cameron. He is the least available in OCs. He's only available at 18%. So we can maybe almost essentially toss him out of there. But he was my top recommendation in 12s last week. Stepped up and had another nice gem. Yeah. I even mentioned it to you. I'm lucky I grabbed him, but I messaged you. I was like, hey, I think I really want to get Cameron. He's available in the main. And I got him for $20. I was pretty stoked about that.
That's a good price. He's been pitching much better of late.
Yeah, he gets the Dodgers and the Angels, so the Southern California, hope he's not a party guy and goes to, bars and stuff kind of guy. But 24 to 6, hope they have curfews. 24 to 6, K to walk rate over his last 24 innings. Just one earned run allowed in the last 24 innings. A little bit there about how he started calling his own pitches on the pitch comm, a little bit of a difference. I don't think it explains everything, but I think he's similar to Painter, right? As far as like the early season results to what is happening now, but a lot more elevated. Like Cameron has been phenomenal.
Yeah, he has. And I don't think folks should be avoiding the Dodgers entirely. I mean, they're not hitting that well. They're not playing that well, but it's still at Dodgers. I mean, maybe it's better because Cameron, I'm pretty sure it's a lefty, right? So, that's better. But there's still a real risk there. The Angels should be a nice start. They should be, the Angels don't look good these days, and they whiff a lot, it seems like. I think they might have the highest strikeout rate in the majors, if I'm recalling.
In the Rockies, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think if you're prioritizing strikeouts and you're willing to take some ratio risks starting Cameron at the Dodgers, it's certainly a viable two-step.
I like
Wesneski. I picked him up in a couple of leagues last year. I think he has pretty good stuff. I think the Astros are starting to play better. And at San Francisco, home Seattle is a pretty good two-step. So I'd be willing to throw that. every time you kind of like dig into Bryce Elder, you're like, I don't want that. But then he goes out and pitches really well at times, you know, and this is one of those times where he's rattling off pretty decent to good starts. And two home starts with the Mets in Arizona, I'm certainly comfortable throwing that. The Mets without Soto just don't look very dangerous. And Arizona can be very hit or miss. You mentioned Jacob Lopez, two starts at Sacramento. So that's maybe the biggest ratio risk of these, perhaps. But he's also maybe the highest upside in terms of strikeouts. Although Tampa, I think, I'm not sure if they strike out all that often, but he can have some big strikeout games. He could also get blown up, but I'm not too scared about Texas at Sacramento, but the Tampa game is probably one I would try to shield my eyes from if I'm starting him. But again, if you're prioritizing strikeouts, it's viable.
Yeah, the Tampa Bay Rays, their active roster against lefties, they have a 17.8% strikeout rate, which is second lowest in the majors. The Diamondbacks strike out the least against lefties. As far as Cameron, you were talking about the Angels, and I like looking, if I'm going to Fangraphs and I'm searching a team stats or anything, there's a little icon there called active roster, which I think is important to click on, especially if you're doing DFS or betting or looking at a matchup for the week, because if you don't click that and you're looking at rates, you could be thrown off by players that aren't even, you know, been injured for a long time or on the team anymore, because those are just cumulative annual stats. But left-handed strikeout, the team striking out the most against lefties as far as current roster is the Orioles, 27% strikeout rate against against lefties. The Reds are up there at 26%. Your Yankees are there at 26%. And then the Giants and Angels and Rangers.
Good to know. Yeah, that's a really helpful pointer.
I mean, let's throw Cameron out of that mix. He's the highest roster, probably will go for the most. But there's Jacob Lopez, you mentioned, the home two start. By the way, that guy, over the last four starts, he's back to being good Lopez. Two earned runs or less in each of those starts, a 17-3 K to walk rate. Usually the guy walks a lot of guys. He hasn't been lately. So you got Lopez with that home two start. You got Bryce Elder, three wins in his last five starts, and you're around one. Home Mets, Arizona, Diamondbacks, Hayden Wesneski, you mentioned, at San Francisco versus Seattle. And then the fourth guy in the mix is NFBC love child poster boy, Dean Kramer. He's available in 57% of OCs. He will pitch for the Twins, his new team, with a home two start against Baltimore and Philly. Where does he mix in for you on those four?
Yeah, probably a little lower. I've picked him up from time to time, and he has not looked all that good to me, kind of disappointing. I think if prioritizing strikeouts primarily, I would rank Jacob Lopez top. If prioritizing wins, probably Bryce Elder. And probably ratios too, to be honest, with Wesneski kind of more in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. I think for me also, I'm always scared of Jacob Lopez. And then if those two starts were on the road, give me Lopez among all those guys, probably first, especially if you're okay in wins. For me, it's close between Elder and Wesneski. I feel like the next step for me beyond this, if I like the two starts similarly, would be to look up to the next projected matchups, and just kind of knowing that both teams could provide win support for them, basically Elder would likely run into the Brewers the following week and then the Dodgers after that, so maybe that's a deal breaker unless I'm potentially cutting him after that, especially in a 12-teamer. You take the Elder two-step. If it goes well, great. Cut your bait. Move on. Wesneski may not necessarily be a hold either, but he would then get the Athletics at home the following week, and then at the Mets. So that also isn't too shabby.
Yeah, no, that's a great schedule.
My last pitching question for you, you may even be in this position. Say you don't really need strikeouts or wins, and but you don't want to handle take on any more ratio punishment. And the guy with the worst ERA among qualified hitters, or worst whip, I forgot what it was, just really bad, is Freddie Peralta. We're thinking, oh, he's coming to Tampa, they're going to fix everything, and right away. And he gets bombarded.
Yep.
So he gets, at the Athletics, home versus Baltimore. Like, what's your advice to people when they're considering Peralta this week? Say 15s and 12s, and what makes the help you make that decision? Where do you sort of draw the line versus other starters, including some of these guys we just mentioned?
Yeah, honestly, I hate to say this, but I think Freddie Peralta is unstartable at the current time. I mean, he looked horrible. He's getting hit hard. He's inefficient. He doesn't go deep into games, and he struggles, I think, even to get to five innings lately. I mean, I'm looking at Freddie Peralta's game log, and in his last six starts, he's only gotten through five innings once.
Wow.
I just think he's a mess. I think if you given his track record of strong performance and the Rays and their skill with pitchers, I unless you really had to needed the roster spot, I would hold him and give them a chance to kind of work with him a little bit. But it's kind of tough. His first start for them was at Colorado, but I'm nervous about throwing Peralta now if I'm trying to protect ratios.
I am too. It's a tough spot to be in. The one thing to immediately separate yourself from is the fact that he owes you anything, or that he's an early draft capital player. Yeah. This is all has to be thrown out the window and think of terms of this week. What can help you? What are the alternatives? You feel safer with a Wisniewski or Elder? I think I might. I would probably pick them up and start them over him, but not drop him. He's just an interesting case because you're looking at everything from, his velocity, his pitch mix, none of that has really changed. He's still a K per nine guy for the most part. Walk rate's 9% as it always was. Lower fly ball rate, but just he's getting drilled. I mean, it's almost a 5.5 ERA through 23 starts so far. If you're looking at peripherals like XFIP and Sierra, it's a run lower, but it's still over four. This isn't the same guy. Maybe he's hurt. Maybe just something's broken. Sometimes we don't know. We never find out, or sometimes we find out after the season that he's been hurt.
Yeah, and I mean, the 5.37 ERA sounds bad, but in reality, I think the 1.52 WHIP is even worse. I mean, that's just deadly for ratio. So yeah, I don't think I would start him right now. It's kind of mind-boggling, but I think you made the right point. Like, don't think about draft cost at this point in the season. I mean, just go with the hot hand, go with the players who look good.
Bobby Brenner jumped into FTN subscriber, jumped into the show a little late, may have missed our Mitch Bratt discussion. But between him, Phillips, and Alvarez, Washington's Alvarez is, he's kind of getting screwed. Like, good starts in the minors, good starts in the majors, not always five innings, and then got demoted. Now he's back up. They DFA'd Zach Littell, good riddance. And so Alvarez is going to get the Mets next week. And then Phillips is on the Marlins. Phillips lines up for Pittsburgh at home. And then we already talked about Bratt. Home versus Colorado might get two, but I think even just one start, I'd probably go Bratt.
Yep.
Then Alvarez and Phillips.
Yeah, I would go Bratt there. It's kind of and maybe hope that Soroka's back so you don't have to make that Atlanta start, but don't you can't really count on that. I'd be comfortable throwing Alvarez at the Mets right now. He's got good stuff. I mean, he struggles to get to five innings, but I think he's capable of doing so. And Yeah, I mean, he's at the Mets this week, and he's at Texas the following week. I'd be tempted by that.
There's another guy I forgot to mention, and he's a whipping boy for me. I've beaten him up in articles before, and almost in a way, beating up, talking smack to high stakes fantasy managers who are probably better than me at this, who seem to love Jake Irvin. Maybe it's the same thing with like Dean Kramer, where people are just okay with a 4 to 4.3 ERA guy, but just sometimes can, you know, maybe sneak in a win, get some K's. But I'm like team never Jake Irvin. And I still, of course, is giving fantasy analysis and putting bids. I have to be reasonable, right? So if I think home Chicago at Mets is worth a couple of dollars, then I would put that. I haven't, you know, gotten to that point yet where I've put, you know, bid ranges amounts in there, but I'm like a never Jake Irvin fan. I mean, where's the disconnect between me and likely sharper high stakes owners?
I'm on your side on this one.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, his strikeout rate is up, you know, but it's only, you know, it was pretty weak last year. So now it's taking a step up, but he still gets rocked. He's still, I just pulled him up, you know, almost a 44% hard hit rate allowed, over a 13% barrel rate allowed. No thanks. The other thing with Alvarez, just going back a second, his last start, he looked pretty good against Philly on the road, and he got into the seventh inning. So he is capable of going five. I will say several of his prior starts did not. In fact, most of his prior starts, he did not get to five innings. But he's at least capable of it.
Yeah, there's another guy I forgot since we're on it. We'll be wrapping up soon. But Jameson Taillon, who was the home run per nine major league leader, it might still be. He just doesn't have enough innings to actually have allowed the most home runs, but he's up there. I think he's, you know, like top five in home runs allowed despite like 50 less innings, fewer innings pitched. He's going to get Boston and the Yankees at home. For me, without digging into it too much or making assumptions of, you know, shifting to Toronto where he's already made a start, I'm probably out on that. I don't know. Where are you at with Taillon?
Yeah, I'd be out too. You know, the Yankees are not a scary matchup right now, so I wouldn't necessarily avoid the Yankees. The Red Sox are hitting really well, as we discussed, and that I do think is a tough matchup. I don't know. You know, Taillon put together, probably overachieved the last 2 years, 24 and 25, and, you know, had sub-4 ERAs with very good whips, even without, you know, much of a strikeout rate. But this year, he's just been getting hammered, and his ratios are horrible. Wasn't pitching deep into games. And, you know, it's not like he's a young guy, and going to Toronto, they, you know, changed him. You know, I mean, he's an experienced vet. Maybe there was a slight change or modification of his pitch mix. But I'm skeptical that I'm not. I guess I'll say it this way. I'm not ready to write off half a season of horrible performance based on one decent start.
Yes, I agree with you there. Wrapping up with looking ahead to next week for the hitters, we won't get it too deep, but as far as we talked about the three shortstops, the rookies and 15 teamers that will be sought after, but there are a few, I think about eight teams or so that have seven games next week. It's not one of those, when I'm putting together the matchup analysis for the week, and sometimes there's a week that just stands out for you where it's really good teams with, or teams with have lots of fab options, they're going to Cincy, Colorado, Sacramento. And this isn't really one of those weeks, but there is one set of matchups that stand out. Unfortunately and ironically, it's a team where it's tough to get excited about their fab options, and that's the Texas Rangers. They're going to get four at the Angels, three at Sacramento against the A's. So they have the best matchup on paper, but Wyatt Langford's rostered, as is Corey Seager and Brandon Nimmo and Jake Berger and Ezekiel Duran for the most part, and that doesn't leave a lot of meat on the bone. Jock Peterson would be a good stream, but the lefty-righty thing is a thing. He doesn't play against lefties, and as of now, he's likely to get three of seven lefties, so he'll probably just play four games. And then after that, it's like, you know, Evan Carter, I know he started against the lefty, but he was hitting ninth. They're just short on outfielders. And then it's just like Justin Foscue, Cam Colley, Alejandro Osuna. Is there anything here worth pursuing? And do we go down the Evan Carter rabbit hole again?
No, or at least I don't. Yeah, it's tough. And I have Carter, I think, still floating around one of my teams. I got to drop him. He just isn't doing anything. It's tough. I think if Jock Peterson's available, the first half of the week is appealing. It's, you know, it's four games, one lefty, three righties at the Angels, who have a lousy pitching staff. It's a pretty good park. And there's the Jock Peterson of 2 years ago. I mean, he's hitting really well now. So I don't, you know, especially in OCs, but in main events or 15-team leagues too, I don't think you necessarily just look at it on a week basis. I think you could really break it up into scoring periods. You know, that at the Athletics right now, they're lined up for two lefties, one righty, which makes it tough for Jock to play. But, you know, come Wednesday or Thursday, maybe that changes and maybe he's facing two righties. But you know, if there's a good, really good half week, I think it's worth doing. On some of my 15 teams this past week, they didn't do much for me, but I, like, you know, I picked up, Palacios going to Colorado, and, you know, I think you can make these moves even for half weeks.
Yeah. Jock Peterson, if you don't have that spot held down by a utility-only guy, then definitely I think he's worth going after here. Other than that, no, I'm not going to have Evan Carter listed for a very, very high amount. He could steal some bases, as possible.
Yeah, that's a good point, Vlad, too. I think, you know, if you're really prioritizing stolen bases, then, yeah, Carter gets three starts against the Angels. I think that probably is worth playing. If you're not prioritizing stolen bases, then I think you could pass on them.
Last question there on this side of things with the Angels. Do you see Logan Ohapi getting called up by the Rangers? I mean, they have Elias Diaz there now and Austin Wins, and then Danny Jansen's been out for quite a while. Kyle Higashioka's on the IL. Since being called up, Ohapi hasn't been doing all that much. He's like 5-for-24 in five games. He's got three doubles, no home runs. But, you know, if say he got the call on the weekend and you really need to stream a catcher, you know, listen, I've been wrong before about Ohapi maybe 17 times. So, hey, why not jump back on that bandwagon?
Yeah, it might be time to let him go, Blood. I don't know. from what I read, all the, you know, trade deadline analyses, give the Rangers credit. I think they got a great deal. I mean, they got Ohapi for basically nothing. And I think that's a really good trade that they made. But when they immediately traded for him and then demoted him, despite not being strong at catcher, to me, it was kind of like, hey, we got this guy. This is a long-term play. Let's bring him back to AAA. Let's take the pressure off him. Let's get him right for next year. I mean, I think I have more faith that he'll be their number one catcher going into next season than I do about them bringing him up this year. I mean, obviously, if there's an injury or he starts crushing the ball, that could change. I mean, if they're still in contention and he has a strong August, I could see them calling him up in September and running with it. But I think this was a long-term acquisition for them.
That makes sense. I don't have anything else as far as the hitters right now. I'm gonna say, you know, after we're done here, I'm gonna dive in and get to my usual Friday work and get everybody ready for Fab. So later today, I'll have the bid range tables up for 15 teamers and 12 teamers, and then the article come out on Saturday. But Mike, good luck to your Yankees. Let's, you know, I think you guys can pull off the division.
I don't know. They are not the same team without Judge, and obviously they're missing Bellinger too. But, you know, if I guess the story is if they get these guys back and can stay in the playoffs, you know, they could roll out Schlittler, Fried, and Cole, Rodon. So they could be formidable in the playoffs, but they're just sputtering now. So unless they need Judge and Bellinger back, and they definitely need to get the offense going. But they could be formidable, especially in the weakened American League. They could be good in October.
100%. Never, ever count out the New York Yankees.
Yep.
So for Mike Meagher, I'm Vlad Sedler. Hope you enjoy this episode. And we will talk to you next week here. Oh, I'm sorry, Mike, do you have anything else?
No, I just a whole bunch of comments in the chat. Just wanted to thank folks for all the comments. Apologies. They were coming in fast and furious, and I can only do one thing at once.
Oh, that's okay. That's all. Sorry, we shout out Uncle Ted, as always. He's got a lot of comments. He likes recap. He likes Ty Madden.
I agree.
Andy Rodriguez is mustache.
Yeah, no, Andy Rodriguez has been awesome. If folks, he's probably not available anywhere. Maybe he's floating around in a 12. If people haven't been watching, he's playing very well, and he can get you some stolen bases from the catcher position. I just apologies. Didn't have a chance to react to too many of them, but saw them as they were coming in, and agreed with many of them. Not all, but many.
Appreciate you, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. Good luck this weekend and everything, and may your teams do well. May you win those bids by a dollar. For Mike Meagher, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast live. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.